Hello and welcome to the Financially Free Females podcast. I'm your host, Katie Elker, and each week I'll be discussing practical tips to help you on your path to financial freedom. If you're ready to pay down debt, build wealth, and increase your abundance, you've come to the right place. Thank you for joining me on our shared quest for financial freedom. Let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Financially Free Females podcast. Today I'm super excited to share this episode with you. I had the opportunity to interview Elizabeth Colgrove of the ReluctantLandlord.net, and I got to do so at this year's FinCon. So FinCon is a financial conference that occurs once a year. This year it was in Washington, D.C., and I got to go for the very first time, and they gave us opportunity to record an episode of our podcast live at the event. So super exciting. It was just such a great energy to be around all the people. It was right outside the main area, so you'll probably hear a little bit of background noise, but this is a great interview packed with lots of tidbits on how to get into investing if you are curious about it. And Elizabeth just makes it super easy and is so relatable as a mom of one, and she's got another on the way. So we talked a lot about moms and business and real estate investing and getting into it, and just so many golden nuggets in this interview. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed recording it. And here we go.
Welcome back to Financially Free Females. Today we are recording live from the NEFE podcasting stage. I have a special guest for you, Elizabeth Colgrove. And thank you to NEFE, the National Endowment for Financial Education, for sponsoring this live podcast at FinCon 19. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
So awesome. It's not only great to be here at FinCon and meeting all these amazing people, but it is like especially amazing to be podcasting live at this event. So,
right? This is my fourth year here and first time podcasting. So this is awesome.
Yay.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course. All right. So you heard a little bit about Elizabeth in the intro, but I want her to, you know, take us back, give us a little bit more information about her. And I'm just super excited. You're going to talk to us about investing, and she's a mom as well. And I know a lot of my listeners are working moms or moms. And so I think this podcast is just going to be super helpful and relatable. And I know a lot of people are really interested in getting into real estate investing. So take us back. Tell me a little bit more just about yourself, your family, and how you got into real estate investing.
Hey, y'all. I'm Elizabeth Colgrove from Reluctant Landlord. My husband is active duty military. I am a proud mom to an 18-month-old, and I'm 6 months pregnant.
Yay.
So I started real estate when we first got started to be able to build a career that was transitional with me and that allowed me to be able to do it anywhere. As a mom of the last 18 months, I can tell you that I thought it was all together, and it certainly hasn't been. If you guys follow me at all on Reluctant Landlord, you'll see that it's a 80% mess. We just make it happen, you know, 80% mom. We get through the moments, and I'm really proud of that, because what I have been able to do is we've built an empire that has allowed me to be able to work, because let's be honest, you do work, but work around the hours of my children. So we still have a lot of babysitting help, a ton. But I'm able to work more when she's available and more than and when the business requires it, but still going on a lot of vacations. And so to tell you how we got started was before the Choose FI and the financial independence movement started, we decided that we wanted to own our future freedom. Me especially, because my husband moved so much. We moved 6 times in 9 years, that it was hard to keep that traditional job that I started. Like, I worked at Toyota, then I worked at Kiewit. Then I worked for 2 more companies, and it was just starting all over again, and I wanted to own that. So that's how we got started in real estate, and then we have just built it from there.
That's awesome. Thank you for that intro, because I think you nailed it on the head when you talk about moms. And Elizabeth and I both have toddlers running around, and it's essentially the same reason why, you know, I started my coaching business and I started the podcast, was to work around the schedule of our children's lives. And I am not going to sugarcoat it either. It's definitely not easy. And we've had lots of help as well, but it's still, it's nice, because then it gives you that freedom to be able to work around your own schedule and not relying on somebody else's.
And you're not answering to anybody else about your choices, right? So one of my favorite stories now, not at the time, right? Isn't those the best mom stories? So one of my favorite stories now is about how I was in the middle of a huge project. I had a whole crew that I was paying per hour at my house, and then I get a call from my nanny. My nanny never calls. My babysitters never call. I get pictures, but never calls. Hey, your daughter woke up from nap, like blood pouring out of her mouth. She's screaming. What do you want me to do? I'm like, I'm on my way. Like, tell the crew, do what you can. I'll be back. And then, like, you're out the door. Because when you're primary parent, it's not your husband that's getting that phone call. It's you. And you have to be there. And what's great is there was no boss to answer. There was no explanation of, like, how we lost $100 that hour while I went, you know. And it wasn't even a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal at the time. It was like, oh, my goodness. But, like, you know, a popsicle, figuring out that she fell, and when she was like sucking her thumb, like it started something and all was well, and popsicle, a hug from mom, and 30 minutes later, I'm back at work. But like, I was like, well, worst case, she can come to work with me. Like, I mean, that's why we do this, so we can make those decisions around our kids. But anybody out there who's in real estate understands that being the primary parent means that your achievements, amazing and awesome as they are harder fought and come slower because you are stopping for the children. I mean, you have to stop at X amount of time to go pick them up. There is no calling the husband and being like, I'll be home late. Because, well, you got to pick them up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. And that is a great story. Like you said, always better. The stories are better in hindsight when you're not worried about what did they do? Why is blood pouring all over the place and the babysitter's calling? So
great.
Oh, that's great. I'm sure my listeners can relate to those horror mom stories as well.
There's lots of them. But, you know, it's getting through it and being successful. And that's the key. It's like you're not a bad mom. You're an amazing mom because look at everything you achieve. So one of the things we're working on right now is some flips. I never thought I would do it. Never say never as a mom or real estate or anything in business, right?
Fair.
But one of the things that I love about the flips is like it's been this opportunity to make some cash, to put back into our business, to keep our teams busy, to try something new. Have you ever done that with an 18-month-old? That's all I have to say. So, I mean, there's been days where it's like one babysitter drops off to the other babysitter that picks up to the third babysitter and then she goes to bed. And you get like text messages. You feel like this like really awful mom. But you know what? It's good for her. And it's amazing. And she loves it. And like she high fives my babysitters. And it's such an amazing opportunity. And then you get to define your own schedule. And so what I do is I know I'm an 80% mom, but I'm a workaholic. So I work really hard to take 1 week off a month. So I've built my business, and it's not really off because let's be honest, you're never off as like a coach or an entrepreneur. You're always working, right? There is no such thing as maternity leave. But what there is there's this ability to take time and rearrange your schedule. So like last week, we went to the beach for 10 days. Like I took my parents and like, don't get me wrong, I worked before and after and during nap time. And then she went to the park once without me so I could work for another hour. So like there is a lot of it, but you got to define your own time. And I think that is just like unbelievably amazing, and that is why like I do what we do and why we got this started 7 years ago. And it is not what I envisioned, but it's become amazing. So just be flexible and like let those doors open and walk down the hallways and peek open and see if those opportunities meet your needs.
I love that. I love just your description of being a mom and a working mom and an entrepreneur, and so many people can relate to that. That's awesome. Okay, so I want to know, and I'm also just personally very curious, I know my listeners are as well, how did you buy, like, the first property? So you talked to me about, you know, the reason why you wanted to do this. So your husband was in military, you were moving everywhere, you knew you couldn't really hold down a regular job without having to move every, you know, however few months, I suppose, or years.
Every 18 to 2 years, it felt like,
yeah.
And sometimes 6 months.
Yep, absolutely. So how did you, not so much the decision to do it, so after you made the decision to do it, how did you do it? Like, what's that? I know that's a barrier for a lot of people. Like, how do I actually get started with a rental property?
The reality is most of you have this opportunity that you're thinking about right now. How many people owned a starter home? Like, you bought a house, right? Did you sell that house? Did you rent it? So we just kept it. Like, that was how we got started. We used these awesome opportunities of zero or low down that they have for first-time homeowners or even just homeowners, because America wants you to own a home, right? Super easy. So when we got started, like, that's what we did. And then I worked and my husband worked. But my job was so iffy that when I could work, it was like, well, is it or isn't it? So we always lived on his income, and my income went into savings, which, let's be honest, really went into investing. So I was able to use what I was good at, which I was a financial analyst by trade. So I bought short sales, which is what I saw, and then I rented them out when we left, and I managed them. So if you're looking to get started, look at your personal situation. Do you have a house from a previous marriage? Do you have a house from a previous life, prior kids? Are you looking at buying that house in the better school district, but your current house has tons of equity and tons of rental income? Like, does what you already own look amazing? Are you moving for your husband's new job and, like, are just getting started in a new city? So can you rent? Can you buy a threeplex for that first year? Get your feet wet, rent out the other two units. Heck, maybe while you're looking for a job yourself, you set up a little Airbnb. I mean, it's certainly a business, but, like, that's something to help you figure out the area. And then once you do that, you can always upgrade to a second house, or you can, like, in a couple of years after you've lived mortgage-free, put that money down and now have another one. So there's tons of ways, and the biggest, easiest way is to look at where you are today.
I love that. Those are all super great examples, and I'm nodding over here because I'm thinking, yep, and I know I've been really honest about our financial story on my blog and, you know, in my Facebook group and everything else. And just like my husband and I, we live in a starter home, and we are having this conversation right now. Do we rent out our home? We have got a good amount of equity. We've lived there 5 years. And do we buy our next, you know, property? And so I'm going to ask you again, selfishly. So, like, when somebody is thinking about that, they're looking at their property and they say, okay, we have some equity. We have some savings. We could, you know, we want to maybe upgrade a little bit. How did you, when you guys did that, when you were looking for short sales, did you then put a certain amount, like, did you have a goal?
Here's an example.
Yes.
Right?
Give me
our first example.
Out. Yeah.
So, like, I'm a big believer in don't take equity out of house.
Yep.
We've done it once. It was an amazing financial move, but that's not the norm.
Yep.
You leave your house equity alone.
Yep.
Because if you keep pulling it out in the next downturn, that's what gets people. So you want to let these baskets fill up. So, but here's the basket we don't talk about. So, like, say I'm going to use our numbers for an example. We bought a house for $950. We rented it out for $1,500, right? So that's $550 for quick math.
Yep.
Well, then we bought another house for $1,450 was our mortgage. It was a bigger house with a pool. That's $550, right?
Yep.
Well, that's the difference between the new, old, and new. So we took the $550 difference from the rental and basically applied it to our new house. And now we had the same amount, but if we had sold at that house and bought and took that equity and put it in, it wouldn't have put us at $950, and you wouldn't still be growing this little box.
Yeah.
So the idea is try to take the cash flow from the two houses difference and apply it to your new house. And if that cash flow can get you pretty close, then that's a great way of thinking at it, because you're really staying at the same mortgage, but now you're filling up another basket.
Yeah. I love that. I've never heard that analogy or that description. That makes so much sense.
Though. Now, okay, hold on. Let's talk real estate people who are like, you're forgetting numbers. Now, you do need to keep in mind, like, vacancy and expenses and all of that. But the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, the house that you were just in, right? Did you just replace the roof, the windows, brand new stoves, like everything's all new and now you want to leave? Those are fantastic houses to keep. Is your house like getting ready to fall apart in 5 years and going to cost you $30,000 because of these new countertop paint, flooring, windows, water heater, and everything else, but you like it's fine for now, then maybe that's not a house you want to keep. So it's definitely to keep in mind, and also keep that even once you keep that starter house, nothing in this world is something that you want to keep forever. So like all of our starter homes, we sold them all and flipped them to better, nicer houses that did more for it. But that's how we were able to use the same equity and the same thing. So if you can build these baskets, and you know, I can't even take credit for this idea. My mom growing up, they kept their starter house. She flipped it once or twice. As it made sense, someone offered to buy it. And she's like, well, why not, right? But like, it gave her this second pot. Well, she was a stay-at-home mom. And that's why I'm so passionate at this idea of you can use the difference, but keep your bottom lines, but someone else is paying off this other house.
Yeah, that is great. I love that idea. And I think it's intriguing, like you said, as a mom, like a stay-at-home mom, because, and that's what I do most days. I'm very open. I have childcare one day a week, and I work around nap time and evenings and weekends. I just hired a babysitter for a few hours another day. But I think it's, that is the key, is like, this is something that you can do to support your family. And you can work it around your, you know, kids' nap schedules if you need to.
Yeah. So like our long-term, as I like to call them, passive houses, if you join Reluctant Landlord Facebook group, if you join our, our Facebook page, if you join Landlord Roundtrip Facebook group, you'll see that I'm very open and honest. I mean, we had Baby Bum Sunday a couple of months ago because everything was like hitting the fan and all my babysitters, including the husband, was on military vacation. And so, like, there was she and I, and I'm like, here's snacks, here's high chair, and this is what I got for you. So, like, there's those moments. But what there really is, like, with the long term, they really don't ask questions. Like, they solve their own problems because they're here for three-year leases. And when you do have to go, she comes with me. I mean, no one cares. It's only when you get more serious, like, doing flips and, like, you and I who get very into the business that you really need the childcare. But when you're just doing one, like that starter home, you could totally bring your children along. I mean, everybody loves it. Now, maybe put Baby Bum on it if you're trying to have like a conversation. Like, let's be honest, technology has its helps. But like, I remember growing up, I got bribed with crab soup. I'm born and raised outside of Annapolis. So like at lunchtime, my payment for all of the work helping my mom was like, I got to walk across. I was like 14, 15. Got to walk across the street and get the crab soup, which was my favorite. So like, involve your kids. It's an amazing experience. And this is how you get to keep them and still work at home, even if you can't afford childcare.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. So when you were, I'm just super excited about this. And I'm so glad you're here, Liz. But I'm like geeking out. You guys can't see me, but I'm just like smiling and nodding and just super excited about this. Because I think this is something that people don't utilize enough. And I think it's because of lack of information or lack of education.
Well,
they don't know it's an option, maybe.
It's scary.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that too.
Everything we see is like, oh my gosh, the rental took over. Well, let's be honest. If you discipline your kids and you hold them to their feet to the fire, and there might be time out in the corner, right? Like, and you take away the stuff, like my kid loves playing with remotes and stuff. And does she get to? No. So like, it's the same thing in landlording. You have to do a background and credit check. You have to like check the income. You don't take people's word. You do the checks for it. That's what we teach at Reluctant Landlord. But if you follow the steps, if you hold their feet to the fire, if you write an awesome lease that has all of the components in it, you're gonna have your moments. I'll be honest, and a mom, there are some days by 7:30, I'm like, thank you for going to bed right now. If I wasn't pregnant, this bottle of Moscato would be gone. Let's just be honest, right? And come on, if you don't agree with me, then you're not being honest. I mean, right?
You are being honest. Yeah.
Okay. So like, but real estate is going to be the same way. There is nothing amazing in life that doesn't have its moments. The thing is, we can't get rid of our kids, but we can get rid of the real estate when it has its moments, right?
So true.
You gotta stick with it. You gotta go through those moments and smile and go, I got this. You really probably don't, but it's okay. There's Starbucks before 5 and there's Moscato after. And you'll get through it. But if you stick with it long term, I mean, our investments have gone up. I mean, look at housing prices and look at if you kept it. Look at the difference between like a 15 and a 30 year loan. It's $300, right? So if you put that profit into that house and you do it, that's your kid's college fund. There's so many options and making this happen. The key is you have to treat it like a business. You have to keep in the mind that you're not going to, like, if you make a decision that's taking bread out of your kid's mouth because they won't do it for your kid, their kids, is that fair? So, like, you have enough responsibilities as a landlord. Hold to them and then let them be responsible for their responsibilities. And if you do that, it is a fantastic relationship long term. And it doesn't have to be forever. You can flip it into another rental. You can sell it later on within the 3 to 5 year capital gain protection. You can, there's so many options, but like getting started is so easy. Like, rent out your primary property when you guys leave. Look at the rent values. You can also look at, like, if you're going to a new area, maybe instead of buying that huge house that you don't know where you want it, maybe you buy a multiplex or like a little single family home. Yeah, it's a year of not fun, but like that gives you an opportunity to see what schools you really like, because sometimes great schools isn't the school district you really want to be in. And then you can take that house that you got for 3.5% down with an FHA loan, and now you can go use a 5% single family home, and that house is now paying for itself. Or maybe renting out the 2 units with the third that you got to stay in gave you enough savings that you can go put a nice down payment on the next one. There is so many options, and I'm super excited that I just tomorrow launch a consulting. It's called Nuts and Bolts, and awesome. Basically it helps you go through all of this looking at your situation, but the idea is open your eyes. There's so many different opportunities and different ways of doing it, and it's risky, but you know, we all took that leap to stay home with our kids, and that was risky too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think too, because we talk a lot on this podcast and, you know, again, in the Facebook group, Financially Free Females, about, I mean, anything with money is risky. I mean, everybody, you know, you can, you know, you invest in the stock market, and people who think the stock market is risky are usually playing for the short-term game and not the long-term game, but there's risk to everything. You know, you can put money into real estate or investing anywhere and lose money, of course, and that's just, that is life. There's risk with parenting. Well, or becoming a parent.
Totally. And it's just keeping the long road, right? So like the market is uncertain right now, but if you keep it, you're fine.
Yes.
It's so like people in the like last 12, 13, 14, if they had ridden it out till to now, a lot of people would have been fine. I'm sure you can give me a case where they're not. There's always that one, but 90%. So, you know, as the analogy I like to use, how many of us have had a car accident and how many of us still drive every day?
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. I've had several.
Right? I have type 1, just as not sure.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, like, it's just how it rolls.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this, because I hear a lot of, like, in the investing, the real estate investing world, about, like, rules for real estate investing. And I love your approach, because it's very much like, you know, just do what works. And I love that you can fit it into, you know, you can fit it into like your scenario, your situation that you already have going. And so my question is, are there any like hard and fast rules that you live by or that you recommend other people do? So like, let me give you an example. So I know I was reading in some real estate investing book probably that you should, you know, always be able, like whatever your mortgage is, you should be able to rent it for, you know, like 10% of that or whatever. That should be your monthly mortgage payment. That should be the monthly amount that you rent the house out for. And so I don't know, or like, is there like, or you should save this percentage into repairs or you need to have this much down. I liked how you mentioned the 3.5 and the 5% different, like, you know, loan amounts that you can use. But are there any rules that you say, well, you know, for your next house, you should put this amount down so you avoid the PMI, or you should have, you know, anything like that? I mean, how do you feel about those rules? And do you have any of your own? I'd love to hear, because I'm sure people listening to this have heard some as well.
So there's the big ones is 1%, 2%, 50%.
Okay.
So 1%. So basically the rule is that if you bought a house for $300,000, it should rent for $3,000. If you bought a house for $300,000, and that's the 1% rule. If you bought a house for $300,000, it should rent for $6,000. That's the 2% rule. That 50% is like your rent and income should like exceed 50%. We haven't followed any of those rules in our entire real estate career. I actually think they're kind of not cool. I have stronger
You
words.
Can swear on this podcast.
Okay, I think they're bullshit. Absolutely.
Perfect.
So here's the thing that I think is more important to look at. So when we got started, we were like, we want to rent okay, let me back up. The important thing to think of is how much extra cash flow do you have in your life and where are you in your financials? I know you've talked about budgets and financing and all of that, right? So you base, I know you've been listening to her, so you're following her rule.
Hopefully they're following.
So like, how much extra do you have a month, okay? So like, keep that in mind. And the question is, my husband and I, when we got started, we had one extra income and then we had his income. So like, we just wanted like $200 over our mortgage for the rent because we knew that if like something dropped out, we could re-change like this savings allocation for something else. So we just wanted $200. It was also an appreciating areas. We knew that the house value would go up. We knew the rents would go up. And honestly, we wanted it to be an annuity that paid itself out. It wasn't supposed to pay me at the time. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to pay itself. And it did. And over time, that $200 difference is now a $700 difference. And it's gone and gone and gone. But we had this safety net. Now, if you don't have this safety net, then maybe you need a $500 difference in order to make sure that you have $3,500 that then becomes $7,000 because roofs, AC units, things happen and you need to be prepped for that because there's no wiggling the switch a certain way when they're a tenant, right? You know, we all have the idiosyncrasies in our houses and that doesn't happen in a rental. They want it fixed and they want it fixed now. Cool. But what I want to caution you strongly about is look at the net versus the gross. So one of the things that I found the most frustrating with all these rules is they didn't look at the whole picture. And the one thing that I pride myself into is looking at everything. So let's use an example. We had two houses, one in South Carolina and one in California. I love Cali as a landlord. I know it doesn't follow any of the New York Times or any of the articles that you hear, and they're enjoying this new rent control global. I mean, let's get out of politics a second. But like, yes, I love it. I live in Central Cali. It's fantastic for my area. I get appreciation, low taxes, and low insurance, okay? So let's just start there. Well, that number, when these 1%, 2% rules were existing, we were at 0.75, 0.8, right? We should never have bought this house. Well, then we bought in, before we had bought in South Carolina, and that was at 1.35, 1.4. I mean, it was like meeting the golden rules, right? But like, what those rules didn't take into is that South Carolina, because it's Hurricane Central, because of everything else, of the flooding, it was like double the insurance of California, even though the prices were like half, right? Wow. The insurance and the taxes and then the federal tax was so, or the state tax was so much higher that it really brought it down to like 0.75. And then you add an HOA, or actually brought down to like 0.9, and then you add an HOAs and it was below, and that wasn't even including like all the HOA like fines and stuff that didn't exist in the California houses because they were single family versus townhouses. Mm. So when the final numbers were looked at, these California houses were producing like 14% rate of returns, and we're like, oh my goodness. So the number that I really, really strongly suggest that you guys look at is, I like that $200, but what I really like is the rate of return number, right? Figure out how much you've put into the house, figure out how much you're producing, and then figure out what your principal is. And based on those numbers, what is your interest rate that you are earning on your money? Because your labor is free, right? So your goal is that if I manage this house, how much money am I making on it? And those are the numbers that I love, because like, some of our VA 3.5, I mean, I just know it's not fair because it's like 0%, but like, if you're like, I'm making 19, 20, 22, we're making some great rate of returns on our cash. And if you put less cash in, then you're good. I personally, right now the market in my area is super high. And so I'm a big believer in putting a lot of money in the houses. That way, no matter what happens, you're set. And understanding that if you're investing right now in real estate, it's a 10-year commitment. Mm-hmm. And if you can get out sooner, be like, ha ha, I told you so, Elizabeth, and be excited, right? So like, we're investing for like a 10-year commitment at this point. But when we got started before, we weren't putting as much in, and it was working fantastic for us because we were using that money to buy more houses and invest elsewhere. So look at the current market, look at your risk tolerance, look at where you're going, and then look at what your other investments are. And if you want to make this investment, and then calculate the rate of return to see what you're looking at. If you're looking at negative 1%, probably doesn't make sense. If you're looking at a 23% and you can use that difference to buy the bigger house, now someone else is paying off this house and you have another house and it's the same monthly payment to yourself.
Yeah, that's awesome. That makes so much sense in my brain, and I'm so glad that you explained it that way, because I think a lot of listeners are probably like, you know, maybe reading some of the books that I've read, articles, and just confused about the whole thing and how do they get into it. I love that you just simplify the heck out of it. So that was awesome, Elizabeth. All right, so I know we have to wrap up here soon. So I guess, you know, if I had to ask you like one last question, I really want to know if there's just any big like lessons learned or mistakes or just like some parting pieces of advice that you want to give the listeners if you had to kind of sum everything up.
Starbucks before 5, wine after 5. Stick with it. It's amazing. I mean, we have had the most tribulation emotional moments that I've ever had through real estate. Oh, wait, no, I'm working full-time, had the same. But we've also, but so that's the point, right? But like family-wise, financially, this has been an absolute blessing. So before you don't do something because of all the hype, join the group, look into it, really decide if it works for you, because I think you would be shocked at how much positive there is out there that like just isn't part of the squeaky wheel that gets shared.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Okay, so Elizabeth, I know you mentioned your website and some social media stuff, but can you run us through again, where can people find you? I know everybody's gonna be really excited about this. I'm really excited about this. So where can we, you know, stalk you, if you will, on the online space?
So yeah, reluctantlandlord.net is our blog. Reluctant Landlord Facebook group is where you'll find where I share a lot of like my mom tips and everything. And then join our Facebook group, Landlord Roundtable. It's 10,500 growing. We grew by 1,000 people last month. We're really growing. And you got anywhere from like brand new, I don't know what I'm doing, to I've done 20,000 transactions and I'm happy to help the newbie. So that's where you can get to know us.
Yay, that's awesome. All right, Elizabeth, this has been so great. I'm not, like I said, so excited to be at FinCon and so excited to have had opportunity to interview you at FinCon today.
It's been awesome. And you know, if anybody of your audience has questions, please let me know. And also, you, if you're interested but a little overwhelmed like you are, we do consulting, nuts and bolts. We'll walk you through your options.
Perfect. That sounds all great. All good stuff. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks. Yeah.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. So that was my interview with Elizabeth of reluctantlandlord.net. Again, she so awesome. It was so great to interview her. I hope you learned a lot from this episode. You should definitely go check her out at her website. She also runs a Facebook group called Landlord Roundtable. Roundtable is two separate words. So check that out if you're interested in learning more about Elizabeth and her mission and investing in real estate yourself. I know it's something that I am definitely getting more and more curious about and starting to think more about for sure. So that's it, you guys. Until next time, thank you for listening and cheers to your abundance.